All right, let's talk to Mike DeCourcy, national college basketball writer, columnist, Sporting News, Hall of Famer. He joins us on the Adam Gold Show. All right, sir. First of all, thank you. I know it's very busy down there in Houston at the Final Four. Definitely one of the top 30 Final Four cities, I think.
Right? There you go.
Yeah.
If there are 29, then yes, it's one of the top 30.
Exactly. All right. So, first of all, we did a little experiment earlier about the lack of name recognition with San Diego State, and I wasn't even including this year's team. But it's hard to come up with a Mount Rushmore of San Diego State basketball at all. Right? You can't even name. It's hard for me to name. I consider myself somebody who embraces the history of the sport. Like, I know Michael Cage. I know Kawhi Leonard. I know Tony Gwynn.
Well, I think you'd have to put Steve Fisher up there because...
Oh, okay, I wasn't doing any coaches. Yes, of course, we're doing coaches, of course.
There are some programs that don't exist without that seminal coach.
And sure.
I mean, San Diego State would exist. But it wouldn't be this.
They existed before Steve Fisher.
Yes.
Michael Cage. Steve Fisher did not coach Michael Cage. All right, so let me ask you this about, first of all, San Diego State wins on a buzzer beater. And as somebody who has been otherwise busy with hockey, missed everything Saturday, did not see a thing from Saturday, I appreciate the way you wrote about the buzzer beater between San Diego State and Florida Atlantic, because it brought me there. It brought me to the moment. It brought me to the decision to not call timeout defensively, you know, to let the whole thing play out, not to foul, and then to let your defense go out and win that possession and create the opportunity for you to win the game on a shot and to not call timeout. That is an incredible amount of trust in your team that we never see in college basketball today. I thought that was a brilliantly written piece that you can find at TSN Mike on Twitter. Walk me through that whole sequence. So I already feel like I was there because I read it.
Well, it started with them scoring with 38 seconds left, a foul line jumper from their backup big guy, Jaden Ledee. He had shot really poorly from the free throw line in the game at 2 of 6. And some of those, I mean, believe me, those four were like, they should have given him another four misses just for the nature of the four misses that he had. And yet when he stepped up and made that foul line jumper, it's now a 1-point game and there's 30. And by the time they actually get the whole thing sorted out, by the time the ball goes through, it's 36 and change. So there's a 6 and change differential in the shot clock, and I'm sitting next to Pat Forty of Sports Illustrated. And Pat said, I'm not sure I'd play this out. And I thought the same and concurred with him. And he tweeted it, and I retweeted his tweet. But then I thought about it, and I thought, and this is sometimes a mistake sometimes people make in watching or even in coaching a particular game, is we thought conventional basketball.
Right.
And the problem was we weren't thinking San Diego State, because if there's any defense in the country that you would trust with getting that stop, that's the one. And Brian Dutcher understood that. And that was the key, him understanding his team and appreciating what his team was great at. And so in retrospect, not just because the buzzer beater happened, but
right.
In retrospect, when considering it, yes, not fouling and playing the possession out with a 6 and change differential was the right play. And so then it came down to they kind of had a feeling that at some point FAU would get the ball on some sort of downhill drive, even though they're good at preventing that. They figured that by that point in the game, they understood that this team had a pretty good plan and yeah. was able to execute that. But they needed it to be a tough drive. And that happened. They were able to get a rope to come over and help. And I asked him if he had blocked the shot, because it looked like he could have gotten some on it because the shot was really kind of meager.
Right.
And he said, I don't remember. That was the best answer. I don't remember. It was all a fog. And then It comes off the rim in front, which was perfect for where Nathan Mensah was positioned, and he grabbed the ball and immediately knew where it had to go because there wasn't any time at that point. There were about eight seconds when the ball came off the rim, and you can't waste any of it. And so he turns and he finds Lamont Butler at that instant. And I said to him, was it hard to find Lamont? And he said, the ball finds Lamont. Those guys are awesome. That is a great answer. The ball always finds Lamont. And he came off the sideline, came right to the middle to get the outlet, and then he brought it up court. And the interesting thing was the one thing that didn't go right on that play was Lamont dribbled down looking for an avenue. He took it all the way down to the baseline. And from where we were sitting, not far from where Jim Nance was sitting,
right,
it looked as if he was never going to get a shot off. We could see the clock. We could see him. We could see the defense. It's like, there's no shot. What I couldn't see was he nearly stepped on the end line when he took it too deep. But he was able to make a one dribble move back and then lean to his left. And he lost the defender in that move and had a clean look at the bucket, and he made it. And so all of that goes into those literally, I guess, 38 seconds to an extent. But those 8 seconds was where so many things happened. And it was fascinating to be able to take readers through that.
I also, and Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News is joining us at TSN Mike on Twitter. I also think that if you are a good coach and you've gone over all of these scenarios time and time and time again in practice, that if you're good, if your message gets through, then your players know what they're supposed to do. And sometimes the expected on the other side is they're going to call a timeout. They're going to call a timeout to set it up. And when you don't, you're putting the other team in a little bit, you know, taking them out of their comfort zone. I always rather, also, most of the time, you have the ball where it needs to get anyway. And when you start going through an inbound situation, sometimes that doesn't happen. And all that stuff is gone. So I think that is, to me, that is really good coaching on their part. Let me ask you about Connecticut. We only have about 5 or so minutes here left anyway. I apologize for that. Danny Hurley has done a great job. How much is Connecticut's resurgence due to the fact that they're back in the Big East? No, I'm not trying to knock the American, but it's different. How much of the being back in the Big East has benefited Connecticut?
It's enormous, really. You can see now as other members start to go elsewhere, they'll be in several will be in the Big 12 next year. The American was something of a marriage of convenience. The Big East is a true basketball centric league, and UConn needed to acknowledge, we're never going to be all that good at football. If we can keep doing it because it's cool on Saturdays, but like it's not going to happen here. Let's do what we do best. Women's basketball, men's basketball, and that, and for them, especially with the men's side, the Big East is where to be. The women would obviously be better in some other leagues,
right,
because they're like you look at maybe the ACC or SEC where or the Big Ten where competition is deeper. But the men needed to be in a league that was basketball first, and that's where the Big East is helping them. Villanova, St. John's, Providence, all those schools are basketball first. You want to take it out further to Xavier and Creighton. But those schools are all, their athletic departments are all built around basketball. And basketball success means everything. So I think it's helped UConn immensely to be in that environment.
It's also their history. And I think history matters. Part of the reason that I have been so down on Maryland basketball is that they have no, it's like they've given their culture back. No offense, and this is not about being mad at, or being, you know, the Big Ten is not a good basketball. He has nothing to do with that. But Maryland is without a soul in Big Ten basketball. They make a ton of money. Good for them. And I'm sure over time they'll probably grow relationships, but they don't have a rivalry game. Zero. No teams in that league look at Maryland as a rival, and Maryland can't look at any of them as a rival. They left all of that when they left the league, and you could probably say the same for Louisville, except their occasional games maybe against Syracuse. But let me ask you about two schools in the Big East, Mike DeCourcy, that have new coaches. Rick Pitino, now at St. John's. Georgetown with Ed Cooley. Back in the 80s, they were part of the absolute powerhouse structure of college basketball. What are the odds that Pitino and Cooley return those two programs to prominence when no city schools, especially Eastern city schools, are worth anything right now in college?
Well, let's remember Villanova, and I mean, it's in the suburbs.
Yeah,
come on, it's a Philly school, and they were.
It's a Philly school, but it's in the. It's not even in the suburbs. It's in Mainline. It's in the rich suburbs.
It is. So it's a Philly school, and they were really. They were Final Four last year with Jay, and national champion two times in the previous decade. So I think it still can be done. I think they hired excellent coaches to do that. In Georgetown's case, I know they hired the exact right coach to do it. I have the highest belief in Ed Cooley. I think he's terrific. And then with Rick, for me, the Rick hire was an obvious correct decision. But it's up to Rick to make it the perfect decision.
Right.
I did a column today grading the coaching hires in all six major leagues. And one thing I said was, like, it's up to Rick. Like, when I wrote this in a big, long piece I did as well in about Louisville and its championship banner and the 10-year anniversary of the championship that doesn't exist, is that Rick was vigilant when he was vigilant during that last decade at Louisville. His eye was not always on the ball. And I don't have any doubt that while he's recruiting for the next 2-3 months, trying to get guys out of the portal and whatever top prospects might be left or undervalued prospects might be left, I have no doubt he'll put all the energy into that. But he has to keep his eye on the ball in order for it to be the perfect hire. Otherwise, if your attention is not near constant, you can have problems like they had during the last decade at Louisville. They had multiple problems because the attention span was elsewhere. And he's 71 years old. He's allowed to have other interests, et cetera. Yeah. But if you want to be the coach, this is what you signed up for.
Yeah, I have my doubts whether the city schools like St. John's or Georgetown. I'm not counting Villanova's city school. It really is.
If you walked on Villanova's campus and walked on Georgetown's campus, it doesn't matter where they are. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it isn't like Georgetown is, there and there's a 7-Eleven on the next block, man. I mean, Georgetown is Georgetown. It's a place unto itself.
Georgetown might be an exception. I don't think St. John's is an exception. I have my doubts as to whether they can truly be back. They have tried a lot of coaches. Obviously, none of them right, but they have tried a lot of coaches over the years to get that place right, and they have not done it. Really, Mike Jarvis was the last coach that won anything significant. I think he made an Elite Eight, right? With Ron Artest.
Players.
Yeah.
They should never have removed Fran when they did. And they've paid for it for 25 years now. It was a significant mistake. If they had problems with the way he was coaching, they were fixable. If it wasn't about that, then their ego is too big. There are two sides from that. Each one said a different story, but whichever story it was fixable. And instead they went for, the immediate ejection button and they've paid for it for 25 years.
It's been a long time, man. I grew up in a time where St. John's and Georgetown were it. I grew up watching the Big East, even though I was an ACC fan, I really was. I grew up watching the Big East all the time. Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News. At TSN, Mike, have fun tonight at the national championship game in easily the 30th best Final Four city of Houston.
There you go. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.